is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. Hopefully everybody's having a great day out there. It's beautiful. It's warm. This is baseball weather. We're going to talk a lot of baseball today because we've got our guy back with us. Ryan Roland Smith is here. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm back.
You're back.
Ready to roll.
Yeah. You're a little adventurous on the way to work, yeah?
Well, I'm going to tell you something because I'm looking at it on the screen right now. I'm going to tell you something right now. That's not true. Ryan Dempster, who hosts Intentional Talk, asked me to tweet that out. I said, why, dude? He goes, will you get in trouble if you write this? I said, no. He goes, just tweet it. I was like, all right. So that's I never break the speed limit, by the way. Never. So
Stop it.
I did him a favor, and I tweeted out. I have no idea why. Hopefully he gives me an explanation. So that's
come on. Are you being serious?
I promise you, I get this random text message. You know Ryan Dempster, he's pitched with the Cubs, the Red Sox. I don't know if you remember Ryan Dempster.
Of course.
He hosts the Intentional Talk, right? Well, I was on the show yesterday with these guys. I get this random text from him, hey, I need you to tweet this out. I said, oh, okay, why? Like, any links involved or anything? Like, he goes, no, just write it for me, please. Okay. And then he writes back, you won't get in trouble, will you, if you write that? I was like, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I have no idea. I want an explanation, so I'm waiting for one. So he was just about to start his show. So that's what that was. But now people on Twitter are saying, hey, man, like, I'm just reading through some of these messages now. But I don't speed, man. I'm telling you right now, I don't. I'm pretty safe when it comes to driving.
Are you? So, okay. Well, because you just tweeted, all you tweeted out was got left off for speeding today.
I copied and pasted exactly what he wanted me to write. I swear.
IT mojo is real.
Intentional Talk, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm curious as to what he's up to. He's up to something. He's a good dude, man. He's very funny. Like, he's good to watch on that show. He's a great dude, one of the good guys in baseball.
Okay, so you were doing 35 and a 35. You were very safe. You're never above the speed limit. You're not the guy. Now, we'll get into baseball here in a minute. But you're not the guy on the freeway in the far left lane doing exactly 60, are you?
Now, we had Grant Balfour on the show yesterday. We talked about some Australian stuff. Now, Australians are very regimented. And in Australia, now we drive on the other side of the road. When it's a freeway, highway, whatever, the only time you get in that inside lane is to pass another car. That's it. Like you, and then you get out.
Talking the far left lane?
Well, for us it'd be the I'm all turned around here. For us it'd be the far right lane, so the one closest to the oncoming traffic, if that makes sense. I'm all turned around, and so when Amanda first came to Australia, I said, "You watch this." I said, "When I drive, watch these maniacs in these cars. If you get over there and if you're not passing someone," so I got over there and just honk, honk. People go nuts. So I am definitely not that person. I'll tell you right now, 100%. I'm not. I will admit now that we're being very honest with. I will say. Sneak into the carpool lane when I'm on my own. I'm sorry. Sometimes I just have to do it. I'll sneak in there and then get right out, I promise.
Oh, you're such a rebel. You are such a rebel. All right.
Hey, Bob, because I got a child sitting in the back of the car. Sometimes I'll, like, if I'm passing a car and I'm sitting next to him, I'll pretend like I'm talking to my son in the child seat. That's how ridiculous it is.
You're in the front seat miming a conversation.
Exactly. It's like, oh, he must have a baby in the back. That's why he's in that.
Oh, that is.
He's not in the passenger seat.
That is hilarious. That is hilarious. Back in the band days, we would drive. We'd always be sitting in traffic on our way to rehearsal, and we didn't have enough people for the carpool lane. So we taped. Remember those styrofoam heads people would put wigs on?
Yeah. Yes.
We duct taped it to the back seat and put a hat on it. And so it looked from the back, it looked like a third person in the back seat. And that was our thing. Never got caught for that.
You can buy dummies to sit next to you. You can buy them online. I don't know where. If anyone's got a link, you can text me. Sure, I'd love to see it. I might need one of those.
I just love the idea of you faking a conversation with your son in the back seat.
I can't believe you got your arms
flailing. You're very animated in the front seat.
Well, it's like I'm paranoid the guy next to me is going to call the cops and be like, hey, we see someone. He's on his own. He's in the carpool lane.
He's a lawbreaker.
Yeah, exactly. So good. That's for sure.
So good. All right. Well, the Mariners get back to business tonight. Game four of their series against the Oakland A's. I wish it was a 10-game series because this team, the A's are bad. Mariners win 6-1. It was a tremendous night for Bryce Miller once again. Six innings, just two hits, six strikeouts, no earned runs. He's now got a 1.15 ERA. And, you know, it's just watching this kid pitch is just special. And Scott Servais after the game just talking about Bryce Miller and facing a team for the second time. That was kind of a question in less than a month. Are they going to, you know, is he going to have to alter anything? Are they going to pick up on things? Is it going to be a different outcome? Here's Scott after the game.
There's going to be some adjustments he's going to need to make along the way. Yeah. The more teams get to see him and, you know, the book gets on him a little bit more. But, you know, if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. Yeah. And the results are outstanding. The thing that has not changed at all is just obviously that the confidence he has. When he takes the mound, he is in total control. It's about as slow as heartbeat you're ever going to see from a young starting pitcher, and it serves him well. I think, you know, there's going to be nights that he's going to have to lean on the off-speed pitches a little bit more, but really good so far.
So what struck you about him last night? Did he do anything differently than you thought he would? Anything differently from the first meeting with the A's?
Yeah, I mean, the only time he's done anything different to this, hey, he's got this elite fastball, and we can dive into what makes it elite beyond the spin rate, in my opinion, but the only time he did that was against the Tigers, and I was watching that start going, you know what, if he throws fastball, I know they're an aggressive team, and they're going to swing outside the strike zone, and they're going to, you know, try and get that they're going to go after that slider, et cetera. But even if he was going to go high percentage fastball at the top of the strike zone, he was still going to have success anyway. It's that kind of pitch. And again, like Scott Servais said, look, he's going to have to lean on secondary pitches, and that's something he was doing in Double A before he came up. That was his big goal, was to say, okay, look, We're getting you ready for the big leagues, but we need you to get 100%. Not that you have to change anything with those pitches in Double A, but just get that feel that you are comfortable throwing these pitches in certain counts. And so last night, watching him, first of all, I mean, basically you could write a giant sign in the dugout of the Oakland A's saying he could have written a letter to him saying, "Hey guys, I'm going to throw fastballs middle up all day long. Just giving you a heads up." And that's what's special about his fastball, is that pitch that you think you are on, especially because it's 95, it's not 99, so you have a little bit more time to see it, but it's spinning like it's 103. And it's defying gravity like it's 103 miles per hour. And that's the beauty of it. And I talk about this with Logan Gilbert, who has a great fastball. It profiles differently. He has that extension. He's 6'6". It's just a different look. For Bryce Miller, it's just straight spin. And it's one of these pitches, I'm on it. You swing, you miss it, and then you just scratch your head. And it just, all it does is mess with your head once you miss it. So I love that. There is a couple things, though, you know, beyond the confidence, beyond the fastball, that I'm not concerned about, but I'm going to be curious how they manage this. He threw 102 pitches against the Braves. Mm-hmm. And then last night he threw 90, which is great. You know, six innings, 90 pitches, I get it. You're trying to manage that workload a little bit. But you also mentioned the fact that his side sessions in between starts are pretty chilled out, pretty easy. I'm curious, and the other element to this as well, the velo started to dip a little bit. He said he started to get fatigued. So if you're getting fatigued around that 80-pitch mark, it's going to be interesting how they manage this, you know, once you get late July into August, how they're going to manage Bryce Miller, because you don't want him susceptible where he's losing gas, he's running out of gas a little earlier than other pitchers, and he tries to push through it, or he tries to rear back, like he said last night. I had to rear back and get a little extra in that last inning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be interesting how they manage that. It really is.
What is he a guy who's, I mean, his secondary stuff, does it play? I mean, you talked about his fastball, and we can get into that. But do you feel like it still needs to be developed? Or do you feel like, no, he's got it when he needs it, but if the fastball's working, you just stick with that?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, obviously that's the one thing. I think, yeah, his slider is still good. It's still really, really good. Still a plus pitch. The changeup is something that plus pitch, we saw plenty of, you know, stuff-wise, really good in spring training. And I was like, well, this changeup's filth, you know, against lefties.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter for him, when you're 24 years old, is to have a certain, like, it's not so much being confident in it, but it's about just understanding the minute you hear it in that Comrex, that, all right, changeup. All right, yeah, this is plan A for me. This pitch, I'm going to throw this pitch here, and I'll feel really good about it. and I'm going to get that swing and miss. That's the difference. It's not so much, oh, yeah, look, I like the way it feels, or, you know, 3-2, great. No, you want to be like, all right, you know, watch this pitch right here. I'm going to get the worst swing on the planet after I throw this pitch. So I think it's about coming down to that. So, again, he's 24 years old. There's going to be some bumps. There's going to be some bumps at the as we get into this summer as
Nuh-uh.
Well. Yeah, maybe not. Hey, you know what? Maybe not, man. Maybe
Why
not.
Are you so negative, man? I'm just kidding.
Well, the other thing is, too, like, you're rolling through, like, these first four. He's probably thinking, like, you know, big leagues is kind of easy. Which, you know,
this could
be a detriment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because all of a sudden, you go two in a row where you do get hit a little bit, or that fastball top of the zone does get hit, which it will. And then you might be, like, a little bit rattled. I don't know. But,
yeah.
But right now, he's probably driving home after the game going, you know, I waited my whole life to get here, and I feel like it's kind of easier than I thought.
Shouldn't this be harder? Yeah. Hey, before we get into what Jerry said about him, I just want to get into a little bit more of the specifics on his fastball, because you were talking about, you know, he's an upper, you know, mid. He hits 97, but that these days is becoming the norm. I mean, that's not crazy. Like, wow, this guy is just throwing harder than anybody. He's kind of amongst a bunch of guys that do that. But what? What is it that makes his fastball so much more effective?
All right, so you have the spin, right? Everyone knows about the higher spin rate, the Magnus effect is going to defy gravity longer, right?
Right.
As it goes to the plate. So the hitter, since they were 6 years old, has seen thousands of pitches come out of the hand. And so it's a certain trajectory. So every ball is going to drop. Gravity is going to take care of a baseball to make it drop, you know, from thin air. In thin air. We all know that. The difference is, for me, is you have got... Sorry, I've got a sound check right here. I don't know if you're bugging the microphone right now. How disrespectful.
I know. Jeez. Well, they know who you are?
Yeah, exactly. We're talking Bryce Miller here.
They don't seem to care.
All right, so the difference to me is this. Okay, so to compare the fastballs, the closer for the Baltimore Orioles, who, I don't even know when we're playing the Orioles, but Felix Bautista, he's filthy. He throws 100. Right, so he has a high spin fastball, and the vertical movement or lack of, right, which stays closer to zero. You want it to stay closer to zero, is just a little bit better than Bryce Miller. The difference is though, Bryce Miller's throwing 95, 96, couple 97s. So as a hitter, when you can see that ball, and hitters can tell you, it's a subconscious thing. A 95 looks way different to 100. A 90 looks way different than 95. That's for sure. But Bryce has that spin and that lack of vertical, which you're used to seeing on a 97 to 100, but he's throwing 95. So as a hitter, you're like, I can see this. It's going to make you try to commit to a ball more often, yet it has the same spin or lack of vertical movement like he's throwing 100, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of the difference to me. And like I said, when you look at – and anyone can be a pro, man. You go on Baseball Savant, anyone can be a baseball pro and talk about this stuff, right? So when you look at that, you want the vertical movement to be closer to zero. It's not, oh, wow, negative 15. That's awesome. So-and-so throws negative 10, 5. No, negative 5 is better because it stays on that zero plane longer, if that makes sense.
Right.
So – yeah, so that to me is a little bit of the difference. The fact that he throws slower is the fact he throws slower, but he's able to spin that ball like he's throwing 100. Because obviously, as you throw harder, the ball spins faster, right? Because you're accelerating the ball faster, of course.
Right.
So does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, don't encourage people. They're all going to go to that website and think they're experts now, and they're going to start texting you. They're going to start hitting you on Twitter saying you don't know what you're talking about, and they look this up on Baseball
Savant.
I
already get that.
Yeah, so I know. I always find that adorable when people tell pro athletes you have no idea what you're talking about. Moving on, but yeah, I get what you're saying, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
Jerry DePoto talking about Bryce Miller and just, you know, his incredible, you know, walk to hit ratio versus innings pitched. Here's what he had to say about that.
I think it's safe to say that if you searched WHIP and started at 0.5, you won't find anybody lower than that. Yeah. It's an insane number. And, you know, again, for him to be doing that at this stage of his career, it's not just encouraging. He's already pitching like a top of the rotation starter. And when you add that to Luis Castillo and George Kirby and Logan Gilbert. It's just such a fun time to watch our team sling it, because every night you see something special.
Yeah, he's not wrong. I mean, you've got Marco does it in a different way, as we talked a lot about yesterday, but he's very effective, always giving the team a chance to win. And then you've got the other four when Castillo's on, which we saw in the last game. That's a guy who's, sitting at 97, 98, 99 at times, and just, Kirby. They really do have the great fortune of having just electric arms outside of Marco, 1 through 4. In that rotation.
He's talking about the whip, the walks and hits per innings pitch, which, obviously combines how many base runners you're looking at every inning. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the other thing, too. 24 years old, he's only got 3 walks. Like, he's only walked 3 batters. It's pretty crazy. And he's facing, by the way, I know he's faced the A's twice, I get it. And Detroit Tigers, they don't like walking either. They want to swing the bat. But the Astros, Braves, it was the same source, man. It was the same. Missing that pitch, he was inside the strike zone. That fastball that they were missing was inside the strike zone, excuse me. And it's he just attacks hitters. That's what it is. Is it the command that's George Kirby command? Maybe not. But the attack is right there with Kirby, right there with Logan Gilbert.
Quickly, one more from Jerry, just talking about the milestones that Miller's already reaching.
I particularly saw the information that Sarah Lang sent out about 6 inning outings of 5 base runners or less. And I just thought it was fascinating and so fun for Bryce, and for that to happen, or for him to achieve that in his first 5 major league starts is pretty remarkable. And, we're fortunate to have so many good arms, and not just on our big league club, but throughout our organization. And it really has carried us through these first couple of months.
So now, Ryan, you go to Game 4. Is there pressure on Logan Gilbert not to beat the A's? Obviously, you want to beat him. You want to complete this 4-game sweep, which would be brilliant. But he's looking at everybody before him throwing a gem out there. We were sitting here raving about Bryce Miller, Jordan, and Luis Castillo, and Marco giving your team an opportunity. So everybody's done their job as a starting pitcher. Do you, as a starter, do you feel that when the guys behind you have done what they've done? Do you feel like, well, I'm not going to be the guy to throw up a dud?
Yeah, well, yeah, you do. I mean, you don't want to be rolling out there, especially, because the expectation now all of a sudden, because you've won the first 3, is to now you have to sweep the A's, and you're like, oh no, I'm gonna throw up a dud here. On the flip side, too, I was just thinking of stupid stuff. I was like, if he was thinking, oh no, Bryce Miller's gonna steal my thunder here, I'm the guy. No, I highly doubt that. But yeah, I just think, look, George Kirby, I think last couple starts, and yeah, again, these guys are only in their 20s. So I'm talking about them like they're 40 years old and they've been through it thick and thin. I mean, there's different emotions that go on. But if George Kirby goes into this game channeling the fact that my split, and we can talk about that all day, that split, that slider all of a sudden is consistent, because I've talked to you guys about this a lot. George, Logan Gilbert, big fastball. The slider can get really inconsistent. That's why you saw some of the lack of dominance last year, because that slider flattens out. Last couple starts, it's gotten better and better. And that split now, I think he punched out nearly every hitter bar 1 or 2 against the Braves on his split. And you go back to spring training, remember we talked all about that pitch, but Pete Woodworth said, hey, it's going to take some time for him to figure out how he recovers, get confidence in it. And now he's starting to righties and lefties. So if he's channeling that, saying, you know what, I'm going to have the same sort of recipe that I did with the Braves, he's going to dominate. But he goes out there, like a 12-year-old, and says, oh, Bryce Miller, how dare you? I need to beat him. I highly doubt.
That's good, though, right? That's healthy competition.
That's trying to
one-up each other. I've said this before the series started. It's tough to expect a 4-game sweep in baseball. I don't care how bad the team is. That's hard to do.
Having said that,
they should sweep this team.
Oh my God, it's just miserable, man. I don't understand. Hey, in just saying that too, I can't believe I'm admitting half of this stuff that we've talked about already. But remember Brandon Morrow? Yeah, Brandon Morrow is one of my good buddies.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah.
But he would go out and just like walk 6, give up a 6 spot, and just, you know, whatever. Because we were both in the rotation at the same time. We both went into the rotations similar time. And then he would go out and just dominate. And I'm like sitting there going, hold on a minute. And everyone was just be like blowing him up, going, oh, man, this is the guy. This is the guy. And I'm like, hold on a second. I just went three straight quality starts, pitching in the seventh. No one cares at all. I'm like, why does he get so much love, you know?
Yeah.
But I get it because he was a first-round pick and everything else. But I joke with him about that even now, you know?
You were Marco in that scenario.
I was. You were just big time. Yeah, I was worse than Marco.
You were quietly just giving him a chance to win every night. Quality start, and he's got the electric stuff, and everybody's got all eyes on him. I love it.
I was jealous.
Yeah. I love it. All right, let's take two.
Well, the Yankees rotation for this weekend is out. They're going to have a heck of a travel day, by the way, on Sunday. They host the Padres and fly all the way over here. Not that we care. No sympathy there. But Gerrit Cole is scheduled to pitch on Sunday, so the Mariners will miss him. They do face Domingo Germán, who returns from his 10-game suspension. He was out due to the sticky stuff.
Does it surprise you guys are still trying to get away with whatever it is they're doing? I don't know what he had. But you could see it on his pants. You could see... He didn't do a very good job of hiding it, whatever it was, and he was trying to say, oh, it's just rosin. We saw Scherzer lose his mind earlier this year. He washed his hands and came back, rubbing alcohol thing. So something about that, I just kind of believed him because he just went so berserk and, you know, and knew they were going to check him. These guys know they're being checked. So I sometimes, in Herman's case, it looked a little more obvious. Are you surprised they're still trying to do that?
Yeah, I am, because when this all came about mid-season, what was it, 2 years ago, they said, look, we're going to start checking you guys now. All right. Every spring training, umpires go in. They do the umpires meeting. And they tell the pitchers, we are going to hardcore check. And we're going to be, like, we're going to be pretty diligent about checking your hand. And this is how we're going to do it. They do a full description. If it's a rule change or how they are going to approach things. And then you still got this. I don't get it. It was so obvious, so blatant. Like, did he honestly think that he was going to get away with that? No chance. Especially after you're watching guys like Scherzer who... Oh, yeah, it's a little sticky. Go wash your hands.
Yeah.
You know, 2 weeks ago, it's all over TV, Instagram, whatever. So I was shocked. I really was. I was really shocked.
My gosh, Bryce Miller.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, what's going on there?
We waited a double click there. I thought Ryan was still talking. So we're going to do this take two with no music. And
I thought Ryan was still talking.
Yeah, yeah, double tap it. He carried on. My bad there, Ryan.
So now we got to listen to Bump and Stacy in the background?
No, we're going to just talk right here. Goodness. So despite scoring 20 runs on Tuesday, the Blue Jays just lost 6-3 to the Rays and dropped 3-4 in the series to fall to 26-25. Now, Alek Manoah, who had been pretty good last year and has been decent against the Mariners, he has been awful this season. He has the worst walk to nine inning mark in all of baseball among qualified starters, worst whip in Major League Baseball, and he has the worst walk per nine inning rate after walking five and allowing five runs in just three innings.
That's a shame. Was he the one that was on the hill when the manager screwed up second mound
visit?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was Saturday.
Yeah.
What a year.
Things are just going their way. I like that they lost 3 of 4, and they're still above 500, and they're in last place.
Alek Manoah, man, he just looks so frustrated every time he's pitching. Because I like watching certain guys pitch, you know, and he'll miss a slider one time, like in the second inning, and he's like, dude, relax. Like, you'll get it. You know what I mean? Like, you can just see he's so in his head right now. It's crazy.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife, swedish.org/cyberknifeprostate. Coming up, we've got an updated timeline on Dylan Moore's return and what it means for that Mariners roster. We'll get into that next. It's Wyman and Bob with Ryan Roland Smith in for Wyman. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We got Ryan Roland Smith back with us today. Coming up at 3 o'clock, Paul Moyer will join us as he does every week. And then at 5 o'clock, John Morosi. You've spoken to John a number of times, haven't you, Ryan?
Oh, yeah.
Is he not just the nicest guy in the world?
He's the best.
It's infectious. His joy is infectious. So that's right. We did the postseason thing at Hatback.
That's right.
The three of us. I forgot all about that.
We'd interacted online, and then I went and did the Olympic qualifiers in Japan, and he showed up. He just volunteered to do it, basically, because he loves international baseball. Dude, it was so much fun. We had such a fun week, and it's just amazing how he knows every single person, knows their backstory. He speaks 20 languages,
yep.
And he just treats everyone like they are the priority. It's crazy. I mean, that's why he's so good at his job. You know, he's such a good dude, man.
Yeah, I love talking to that guy. Yeah, I totally forgot about our playoff broadcast out there at Hatback. We were out there in the smoke. Remember,
right.
It was very smoky,
yep.
And that was the 18-inning day. So, yeah, that was fun. But, so we'll talk to John Morosi coming up at 5 o'clock. Meanwhile, Jerry DePoto talking about a few different things this morning, and something we had sort of touched on is, you know, Dylan Moore, when he comes back, what happens, what goes on with the roster. Here he is addressing that.
Oh, we'll do the right thing for the club in the big picture. And a lot of that just comes down to the functionality of the players and how they all fit together. But you know, I think it goes without saying that what we've seen here over this last month, especially, but, you know, from the moment he's been called up to the big league, Cabbie's kind of earned his spot. And it's his time, and he's taken the best advantage of this opportunity that you can possibly take. And we'll let the roster play itself out over the next week or 10 days and determine what the right thing to do is. But, yeah, in the meantime, we'll just keep writing Cabbie's name into the lineup.
Yeah, Caballero with a hit last night, 2 walks, so he got himself on base 3 times. And they had him out there at third, but he did kind of muff that ball. I know they didn't give him an error, but that he should have had that ball. He looked like
he should have. He'll be the first to tell you that.
Yeah,
and I was telling you, Bob, because you and I are both big fans of Caballero, and I was telling him, hey, man, wait, you see him play third base, because that's what he did in the WBC. I was like, I was really impressed.
Yeah.
And then he goes ahead and zooms that one ball last night. I was like, whoops.
Yeah, that was some favorable hometown scoring there. Gave him a double on that. But, yeah, I mean, exactly. We're nitpicking. He's been so great. Great. And then just very adept at working the count, getting on base, a tough at bat, even if it doesn't result in a hit. We talked about the 12 pitch at bat the other night. So he's in there. Now it comes down to, all right, is it going to be Haggerty had that big double last night, drove in 2. That was a huge moment. He worked a walk as well, but feels like the obvious move when Dylan is back is probably Haggerty being optioned down. Do you think?
I think so. And you know, just talking about this from a business standpoint and you know, Jerry DePoto, he says what's best for the club. But at the same time, what's best for the club sometimes too, I hate to say it, is making sure you've got as many players in a Mariners uniform, you know, under the roof as you can, as opposed to making a brash decision saying, oh, well, you're struggling. And if you know what I'm talking about, you know, Colton Wong.
Yeah, the hopes that people have they're going to DFA Wong.
Yeah.
Probably not likely.
No, because first of all, it's not even June yet. Second of all, you need numbers. You need players. You need the Triple A team to have just to be guys who should be here. That's a great luxury to have. And I'm telling you, man, I was just a couple of different organizations that I'm looking around going, man, the only reason you are not here, you could be playing every day with some of these other MLB teams. But the only reason you're here is because they just have you know, depth, and it's always the biggest the difference maker. So if you have a situation where you have a guy like Sam Haggerty where you can option him down, it sucks. I know he hit the double last night, but that's just the way it goes.
One more from Jerry, just on the timeline for Moore's return.
Probably not too different than where we were when Justin spoke to the media on Monday. I think Demo, he's playing in Tacoma, played last night. This recent rehab assignment is only 2 days old. You know, and I would caution, you know, Dylan didn't have a spring training, and we're now in the third week of May. So, you know, we can forecast when he wants to come back or when we'd like him to be back. But I think we have to be patient enough to just allow it to develop. And, you know, we have 20 days. I don't suspect that we'll take all 20 of those days, but we should be patient enough to allow the ship to get out in the water before we make too quick a decision.
Let that ship get in the water there, Ryan. I mean, you let it get way out there. Get it offshore. Let it float around for a while, and then we'll reel it back in.
Yeah, now give yourself, give yourself as many days until you actually have to make a roster move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what it is. I've been in that situation. I was on the IL, and I was pitching just fine, ready to roll. There was no spot in the rotation. They kept saying, oh, well, we want you to work on your changeup now for the next 10 days while you're down there. It used to be 30 days, I remember. There was a 30-day, once you hit a rehab assignment, that clock starts. It used to be 30, I think it's 20 now, or 25, I can't remember. But once that clock starts, and you just play it out. You'll wait there until they have to make a move if everyone's doing their thing. And so, you know, that buys Sam Haggerty obviously a little bit of time to keep playing, and it buys them a little bit of time if they do have to make that tough move. But, you know, unless it's a superstar, by the way, and nothing against Dylan Moore, don't get me wrong. If it's Julio Rodriguez, guess what? The minute he's ready to roll, up you come.
Yeah.
But if there's someone who's playing sort of parallel to you in the big leagues, they're going to wait it out.
Is there a chance that you know, we're just going to the obvious because they're similar players in Sam Haggerty and Colton Wong. They're all second base guys. We see Haggerty at first base, can play multiple positions, much like Dylan Moore. And if they're not going to DFA Wong, is there a chance it could be a Taylor Trammell? Is he a guy that maybe you send out? I don't know where he's at with his options, but he's a guy who's, and I love Taylor. I mean, you know, Dave and I are co-presidents of his fan club. Love that guy.
Yeah.
Having said that, he's got, what, 4 hits so far this season, or 5 hits. 3 of them are home runs, but he's, you know, he's hitting 143. He's not getting a lot of time out there. Is he a candidate?
Yeah, and speaking of the options thing, I want to make clear of this as well. If you, on the day where you have to make a decision or you're ready to make a decision, you look at Taylor Trammell, and that's a good one. I mean, I kind of forgot about Taylor Trammell. And I'm not 100% sure. I think he's out of options.
Oh,
I believe
is he?
He's out of options.
Okay.
I believe so. But in saying that, well, they, on the certain day, depending on who's on the waiver wire, what he's hitting at that time, what are some other needs around baseball, how likely is he to be lost out and claimed off waivers? And if that likelihood, and they've done this for years and years and years and years and years, if that likelihood's very slim, that no team is in a position to grab him off waivers and put them right on their big league team, then they're going to try and slide him through waivers, take him off. Right. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm saying, you know, whoever the example of it is. And they do that strategically. Certain, it could be a Wednesday coming up, like, hey, this is the day. This is the day we're going to start that waiver clock, get him through there. And then he's down in AAA, and he's one of our guys just off the roster.
Yeah, they've in the past, I've seen where they've done like almost entire rosters of guys who are guys that are making ridiculous amounts of money, and they put them out there on waivers to see if a team will claim them. And, you know, that's something we've seen like way in the past. Obviously, that doesn't apply to Taylor Trammell, but in terms of manipulating the waiver wire and things like that.
Well, they used to do that back when you had the non-waiver trade deadline. They used to have the revocable waivers, where you could put him out there, see if someone claims him,
and then pull him back.
You try and sort of trade out. Yeah, it's so weird. The dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's the stupidest thing. They used to do that. Like, you know, Jim Thome would get traded after the trade deadline because they'd throw him out there, 5 teams would pick up on it, and then they say, okay, give us these 3 players. Yep. And they've done away with that, though, which is kind of good.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what they do. As Jerry said, sounds like you got a couple weeks to play with here and figure it out. Yeah. And we'll see what, you know, Haggerty does in that time, what Taylor Trammell does. I was just thinking about Taylor, and I pull for that guy more than anybody. But if you're looking for candidates to maybe they move him down or do what you just talked about, if he's out of options, could see him go that route as well. So we'll keep.
Yeah. And just one more thing on that, too. I think with Caballero, Sam Haggerty. Caballero can run, he steal bases, can pinch run. Because Haggerty does have the speed element, I get that. With Taylor Trammell, these next couple of weeks, while he knows that Dylan Moore is going to be 2 weeks away, and Haggerty, you just have to do everything you can. Every time you just have to be as dynamic of a player to show that there is value in other areas besides what your batting average is, what you're on base, and all these things. Show that you can be a dynamic role player. If you don't want to get sent down, that's for sure.
Yeah, good point. All right, coming up, there's one thing the Mariners are facing this year that they didn't have to last year, and it could impact their playoff chances. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. We got Ryan Roland Smith in today. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, our buddy Paul Moyer will join us on the program. I think Paul's a big fan of Ryan, is he not? Wasn't he kind of gushing over him last time?
Yeah, I think he was more excited to talk to him than if Dave had been here.
Oh, well, that's
I definitely can
true.
Ask Paul, yeah.
I don't know that Paul ever gets that excited to talk to Dave. Yeah.
Paul's a man. It's the best conversation when he's on. It's just the best radio ever.
Look at this. Look at this. Just buttering him up. So he's going to come in here going, Ryan Roland Smith, you're the greatest. You're the best. I love talking to you, man. Thank you so much for talking to me. No, but Paul will be with us at the top of the hour. He's always fun to talk to. So stay tuned for that. Ryan, one thing we haven't really gotten into that's new this season that I don't even know that we've considered what it's going to look like because the season hasn't played out. But, you know, teams only play 13 games against division opponents now as opposed to 19. What kind of impact does that have when we were looking at playoff chances for the Mariners in a year, especially when you're missing opportunities to play the A's more than you normally would? That's six fewer games against the A's than you would otherwise have. And then you look over at the AL East, even with the Blue Jays dropping 3 of 4, they are still over 500. They're in last place, but they don't beat up on each other as much. So when you start looking at playoff spots that are available in an entire division that's over 500 and all of that, does this hurt the Mariners this year?
Well, first of all, the AL West, you've got, and let me ask you this, do you want to play the Astros, Rangers, and the Angels even more often? I mean, how good they are. It depends on, obviously it depends on the year, I think, with this schedule.
Right.
One thing I will say, Curtis Rogers brought this up to me, and I still haven't. I asked him to send me the link, and he just said, "Yeah, I'll do it," and he never did. Thanks, Curtis.
Sounds like him.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a Mike Lefko move right there. I asked him because he brought up this interesting fact, and I talked about it on air the other night. The AL West has the worst record against any team outside of the division. Now, this is, mind you, this is, you know, a couple days back. The AL East, which is just dominating, look at all those teams. The AL East have the best record of any team outside of their division. And so you look at that and you're like, oh, wow, that's interesting. Well, a couple of things. When you look at the schedule and you've got to face these different teams you don't know and everything else, when you watch, for example, the Oakland A's, in the month of September, let's say this is 2022 and you're really trying to go for that playoff spot and you're in that, you know, the wild card race and even the division.
Right.
And you face the A's a bunch. You go there, they come here. They always try and cram these games in, especially like late in the year. Man, that would be nice, wouldn't it? To be really nice to have that.
Yeah.
Because you know it, and even if you're facing other teams, that you get that unbalanced schedule where you face, because you know exactly what you're up against. You know how to, especially for the Mariners, and I think it serves their purpose too, because pitching always beats hitting when the scouting reports are big. Right, that's for sure. So that is a little bit of a detriment, I think, this year. The other thing is, too, depending on what time of year you're facing these really good teams all over the country as opposed to the bad teams all over the country and teams you haven't seen. So, like, for example, the Mariners have had a rough – in 2023, we haven't seen the 24 schedule. They've been AL East – they've been out to the East Coast. I think Aaron Goldsmith mentioned they hadn't played a road game, started a road trip – in their time zone and in the East Coast time zone every time. So that tells you they're playing so many teams out in the East that have been really good. It's been a tough stretch for games. And so if you have that, and I say this all the time, you kind of break the season up into a couple different seasons within themselves. Get to that situation where you're ready and willing to go crazy at the trade deadline. There's a certain point in the season where the front offices meet up and say, all right, what are we doing at the trade deadline right now? We talked about this yesterday. What are we doing at the trade deadline? Who are we willing to give up? Are we going to be in it? Or are we just a marginal team? We don't want to go crazy. Let's chill out a little bit on getting certain players. Or the other one, if you're just getting crushed, you're like, right, okay, we're just going to sell off this player.
Just
that player,
unload.
Yeah, exactly. So when you look at the schedule for the Mariners, you're looking at, man, they've had some tough matchups. And I haven't dived into the month of July just yet, but it's interesting because you kind of break it up into that, and you don't know what you're going to face in the month of September. In other words, you haven't faced them at all yet, and that's the one detriment, I think. But I love the schedule. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to find, some of the things that would be a detriment to the Mariners, especially this year when you're talking about that chase to get that one of those wild card spots.
Yeah, I'm looking at their schedule now. So starting July 1st, you'll start game two of a 3-game series with Tampa Bay. Then you're on the road against San Francisco, and then on the road for 4 against Houston. That takes you up to the All-Star break, July 9th. So Yeah, just the beginning of July is a bit tough with a ending with a 4-game road trip, and then the second half of the season picks up. You got Detroit at home for 3, Minnesota at home for 4, Toronto at home for 3, Minnesota on the road for 3, and then you wrap it up with the road trip against the Arizona Diamondbacks for 3.
Okay, and then go to the month of September if you got it in front of you. You've got
starting September, you start out 3 with the Mets on the road, followed by 3 against the Reds on the road, followed by 4 against Tampa Bay on the road. Yeah, so you start out on the September is a big long road trip, and then you come home, and then you've got the Angels for 3, the Dodgers for 3, and then the A's on the road, and then Texas on the road, Houston at home, and you wrap up the season with 4 against Texas at home.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be in a good place. And just looking at this, and again, the Mets in the month of September, kind of weird. The Reds, weird. I get it, Tampa Bay, fair enough. I've played Tampa in September back in the day when different style of schedule. Angels, sure. Dodgers, mm-hmm. Man, if you get to, you got the A's there. Here we go. There's the A's. Nice. In Oakland. I like it. But I'm looking at this, man. There is no breathing room, really. I mean, the Reds, sure. Yeah, the Reds and the A's.
Yeah.
Everyone else is tough.
Yeah.
Like, really tough.
Texas, especially Houston, and Texas to end the season.
Especially when you're out in New York as well against the Mets, September. They're going to go crazy, go big, get some new pieces. You know. It's interesting, man, with the schedule. I just find it's just a little bit different because you're so used to playing these guys over and over and over, and that always helps the pitchers out. It really does. When you've seen each other a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to – and we'll figure out who these teams are more, obviously, as the season goes on. But right now you look at it and go, oh, boy, that gets pretty rough to end that season.
Yeah,
so hopefully they're in a good place record-wise where they can afford some damage should it come, you know, in the way of losses. So we'll see where they get themselves. Right now they're ahead of last year's pace by, I think, 4 games. So, all right, coming up. As we talked about, these guys are fans of each other. We just heard Ryan just waxing poetic about the greatness of Paul Moyer, and we've heard Paul come on here and just, you know, he's just shivering with excitement to speak to Ryan. We're gonna join these two next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.